Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Israel charged with Syrian strike. The Lebanese militant group Hezbollah says an Israeli airstrike Sunday near Syria's capital killed one of its fighters. They say the man killed, Samir Kantar, had spent 3 decades in prison for murder in Israel before being a part of a prisoner exchange. Kantar had gone to Syria to fight alongside President Bashar al-Assad's forces. Sunday's airstrike hit a building in Jarimana, a suburb south of Damascus. There was no immediate comment from Israel. The Democratic presidential candidates held a debate in the northeastern state of New Hampshire Saturday. The three candidates focused on the U.S. economy and defeating the Islamic State group. Jim Malone reports.
Frontrunner Hillary Clinton and her main challenger, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, both focused on the need to defeat the Islamic State group.
I have a strategy to combat and defeat ISIS without getting us involved in another ground war.
One that does not get us involved in perpetual warfare in the quagmire of the Middle East.
But Sanders, Clinton, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley differed on whether ousting Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad should be part of the strategy to defeat Islamic State. Jim Malone, Washington.
An Air France flight was forced to make an emergency landing in Kenya after a suspicious device was found in a laboratory. No explosives were found, and the head of the airline says it was a false alarm. The Boeing 777 was headed to Paris from Mauritius when a passenger noticed something that looked like a stopwatch mounted on a box. The plane made an emergency landing at the airport in Mombasa. All 459 passengers and 14 crew members were evacuated. This is VOA News. Hundreds of people protested in New Delhi against the release Sunday of the youngest person convicted in the fatal 2012 gang rape of a woman. That sparked international outrage and led to changes in India's rape laws. Among those protesting were the parents of the woman who was beaten and raped by 6 men aboard a bus. Police said the youngest attacker, then only 17 years of age, was the most brutal of the rapists. He beat the victim with an iron rod before assaulting her. Police say the convict, now 20, has been handed over to a charitable organization. China state media say a landslide has hit a southern city, burying 22 buildings, including 2 workers' dormitories. 21 people are missing. The official Xinhua news agency says the landslide struck Shenzhen in Guangdong province on Sunday. Hundreds of rescue workers have been sent to the area to look for survivors. Thailand and Cambodia have agreed to boost economic and business ties during an official visit to Thailand by Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen. Ron Corbin reports.
The visit by Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen was the first in 12 years. Speaking after the signing of several agreements to boost trade, business and security, Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha said both countries aim to strengthen bilateral relations. Prayut said the Thai-Cambodian relationship is currently at its best. Earlier, Hun Sen called for more Thai investment at a Thai and Cambodian business forum. The two countries pledged to triple bilateral trade and investment by 2020. Ron Corbin, Bangkok, Thailand.
2 dozen survivors of an overturned ferry in central Indonesia have been plucked from rough seas. The vessel was carrying more than 100 people Saturday when it was buffeted by waves, reported to be as high as 5 meters. The transport ministry said search and rescue ships have been deployed to look for survivors. UN-brokered peace talks for Yemen are due to end Sunday. After 6 days of negotiations, the talks in Geneva are being led by UN envoy Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed. He expressed concern about the ongoing fighting between pro-government forces and Houthi rebels, despite a ceasefire agreement. A Danish lawmaker has left the ruling party to protest a proposal that has made concerning refugees. Jens Rode says he has defected from the Venstre party to the centrist Danish Social Liberal Party because he is appalled at a proposal to take valuables or cash worth more than $437 during border searches. Rwanda's National Electoral Commission says practically every voter supports lifting term limits for President Paul Kagame. More than 98% of voters in the referendum voted to change the Constitution. I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We hope that by the end of tomorrow, the public shall have known who placed the bomb in the plane.
Kenya probes passengers after bomb scare alert on a French plane was diverted to the country.
Because of the age of the president, there is a struggle for power, serious struggle for power to replace the president.
The Zimbabwean opposition political parties celebrate the recent signing of the National Electoral Reforms Agenda.
They'll be provided with information, including about Ebola and other aspects of their return. Then they've been given aid.
And the UN Refugee Agency resumes its voluntary repatriation of thousands of Ivorian refugees from Liberia. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Kenyan Interior Ministry, Joseph Nkaise, said several passengers aboard an Air France plane that was diverted to Kenya following a bomb alert were being interrogated. Minister Nkaise, who flew to Mombasa early Sunday, said the plane had been removed from the runway and investigators were working in liaison with officials in Mauritius and France. I reached Rawlings Otieno, a reporter with the Standard newspaper in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, for the latest development.
The latest update is that the police officers and the intelligence, together with the bomb experts, are still launching investigations to try to find out where the bomb might have come from, whether a passenger might have come with it from Mauritius. So far, the investigations have not revealed anything, but we hope that by the end of tomorrow, the public shall have known who placed the bomb in the plane.
How are Kenyans reacting to this, knowing that the country has been facing some armed groups that use sometimes ammunition, including bombs?
Well, so far, it was a scare of both for the passengers and for the people working at the Moi International Airport in Mombasa. It was a scare for both the staff at Mombasa International Airport and Kenyans at large. They are saying that the security concerns are still there, the terrorist issues are still there, and they need to be more alert. The officers need to be more alert. They need more intelligence.
Any assurances from the authorities concerning the containment of this bomb? Because people have expressed concern of possible explosion if care is not taken.
The latest update that we had was that the bomb was picked by Kenyan Navy officials, and so far we don't know whether it has been detonated or it has not been detonated. But what we know that they are examining the bomb to find out what type of bomb it was.
Did they say when they are going to finish their investigations and when the latest update will be given to the public?
What we learned this morning was that the Interior Permanent Principal Secretary flew from Nairobi to Mombasa and held consultative meetings with officers who picked the bomb. So we hope to get an update probably tomorrow morning.
But so far, the situation is under control at the Mombasa airport, correct?
Yes. So far, everything is under control.
Rawlings Otieno is a reporter with the Standard newspaper in Kenya. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. Zimbabwe's opposition political parties are celebrating the recent signing of the National Electoral Reforms Agenda, or NERA, by the yet-to-be-formally-launched movement called People First. The group is said to be led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. The opposition is uniting under Naira with calls for President Robert Mugabe to level the political playing field with key electoral reforms ahead of the 2018 national polls. For commentary on the developments, VOA reporter Sandra Nyaira reached out to political analyst Sidney Chisi from the Zimbabwe National Agreement Platform technical team and Gazira Chirumanzu, an analyst with links to the ruling ZANU-PF and President Robert Mugabe.
My analysis of events in ZANU-PF is very clear, that ZANU-PF is an old president, and because of the age of the president, there is a struggle for power, serious struggle for power to replace the president, who may either die anytime or resign anytime. And the serious jostling for political power has led to an intense internal struggle, or a dog-eat-dog situation, in which a lot of people think that there is a possible chance to succeed the president. And therefore, they are also competing for the ears of the president. And this, therefore, has led to a lot of lies and told stories with the consequent expulsion of members from ZANU-PF.
Your take, Mr. Madidize, on what is happening in ZANU-PF currently?
This is normal to a party like ZANU-PF. You find factions coming up and others dying away. This is normal because ZANU-PF as a party is old. That's point number one. Another point is that the leader of that party is old and has been in power for too long, because there was no succession plan since 1980 up to now. There was no succession plan, and this is causing the development of factions and the dissolving of other factions. This is all because of the succession question. Once that succession question has been answered, we won't have problems in ZANU-PF. It will be a stable party. These suspensions and these expulsions will continue unless and until the succession question has been resolved.
Coming back to you, Mr. Ashou, looking at what happened last year, we were all shocked when Mai Mujuru was booted out of the party. Do you see another shocker coming up or brewing up that we may have Mr. Mnangagwa no longer being the president, or the vice president rather? Do you see that happening over the weekend?
Well, the events in ZANU-PF are unpredictable. Unless ZANU-PF is self-destructive or wants to end itself, I don't foresee a possibility that the vice president, Comrade Mnangagwa, may be deposed, or that he may be replaced by the wife of the president, Comrade Grace Mugabe. I don't see such a situation happening. But you know, ZANU-PF is unpredictable. No one ever thought that ZANU-PF could expel the former vice president, Joyce Mujuru, former gurus like Didmus Mutasa, as other luminaries of the liberation struggle. My point is very clear, that elevating people with no liberation history like the wife of the president, and relegating people with credible liberation struggle in spite of their cruelty, I think will be suicidal.
Coming to you, Mr. Madirize, you were talking earlier on about the succession plan. Does Mr. Mugabe have a succession plan, or events are basically overtaking him right now?
He does have a succession plan, which he doesn't want to reveal anyway. This plan revolves around his relatives and those who come from Mashonaland province, those who come from maybe from within the Gushungo clan. This succession plan cannot be unpacked now, because the war veterans might not agree with the plan. They are the key stakeholders of ZANU-PF. And if they don't agree with the plan, the plan will be doomed to fail.
What are your expectations of this conference? What do you think is going to happen?
This conference is going to be an eye-opener to most of the people who are not aware of what is actually happening in ZANU-PF. It is going to reveal to us that the issue of factions, the issue of G40 and this other old guard faction, is not just a thing of the private media. The divisions are going to be clearer than before. And if they are not careful, this conference might actually mark the downfall of ZANU-PF, and maybe the downfall of other key members of that particular organization called ZANU-PF.
Dr. Shaw, do you agree that this could mark the end, or the beginning of the end, for ZANU-PF if things are not handled properly?
Unfortunately, I may not agree. One thing which I agree with him is that this conference would reveal the major weaknesses of ZANU. But I do not agree that then these weaknesses may lead to the demise of ZANU. You see, because ZANU uses the army to plan, they have several scenarios. So after noting several weaknesses, it may then give also Mugabe an opportunity now to consult the army, to come up with a grand plan to force people into units under his schemes using the army. So there are two possibilities, possibly of weakening it, but also strengthening it after realizing the major weaknesses dividing the country or dividing the people. Because they never listen to what the president does. Even if he is castigating people for being divided, he is well known for indicating to turn right when he's turning left. So there are two possibilities, of course, revealing the weaknesses of the party, that in itself is a fact. But at the same time, it may also, therefore, then give an opportunity for the army to come up with a strategic plan to ensure that they unite the people.
Political analysts Sydney Chisi and Gazira Chirumanzu, they spoke with VOA reporter Sandra Nyaira. The UN Refugee Agency said its voluntary repatriation of thousands of Ivorian refugees from Liberia has resumed now that the Ebola epidemic that gripped West Africa is over. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The United Nations Refugee Agency said Friday that two convoys carrying 645 Ivorian refugees have begun their journeys home from two Liberian camps where they lived for the past few years. The agency says two more convoys are planned by the end of the year. Some 300,000 people fled Ivory Coast during the violence that followed the November 2010 presidential election, including 200,000 who went to Liberia. The political crisis ended in April 2011, and in late 2012, the UNHCR began its voluntary repatriation program. However, the program was suspended in July 2014 when land borders between Ivory Coast and its neighbors Liberia and Guinea were closed because of the Ebola epidemic that eventually killed more than 11,000 people across West Africa. Now, with the epidemic over, UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says the refugees are eager to go home and that many of the 38,000 Ivorian refugees still in Liberian camps say they wish to return immediately. Edwards tells VOA that on arrival, the returnees will spend a day in transit camps where they will get a hot meal and undergo a medical screening.
They'll be provided with information, including about Ebola and other aspects of their return. Then they're being given aid. They will be taken as far as possible back to their home villages where they'll get further reintegration, help, further support in re-establishing livelihoods and the aid they'll need to immediately get on with things.
Edwards says the refugees will receive basic items such as kitchen utensils, mattresses, and mosquito nets. He says the World Food Program will provide each refugee with food rations for 3 months. While the agency has helped some 40,000 refugees return home, another 160,000 Ivorians have returned on their own. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Representatives from various United Nations agencies were recently at refugee sites and camps for internally displaced people in the towns of Bol and Bagassola in the Lake Chad area. The region has been severely impacted by insecurity from Boko Haram-linked attacks. Mary Ellen Magrorty, the World Food Programme Country Director for Chad, told Ricky Shryok that the violence often carried out in marketplaces is increasing food insecurity for those already in need.
We visited some of the internally displaced sites and the refugee camp. You know, we were currently looking at an increased figure of internally displaced people as people flee the islands in Lake Chad for security on the mainland. We currently have a number of over 90,000. Could possibly increase following the weekend. These are just ordinary people who were living their lives on the islands, you know, fishing and farming, had to flee and leave everything behind, and now are totally dependent on the international community and the humanitarian sector in Chad. From a WFP perspective, we're providing food and nutrition assistance. In November, we reached over 68,000 people across 19 different sites. In December, we're looking at a further increase in that number across the UN system is what the NGOs is providing, also shelter and water and sanitation and basic health services.
Recently, traders in Baga said that right now, on a good day, maybe 5 truckloads of fish are transported out of the town, whereas before, maybe 100 trucks a day would carry fish from the market out into the communities.
You know, for those people who have been displaced, they're severely food insecure. It's about 10-12% of the population. I mean, they have lost their livelihoods completely. The wider impact on the host community and that were dependent also on the markets, and also, of course, those, you know, that traded through the markets. Of course, you mentioned, of course, the fish, yes, severely impacted. And, of course, the trade in animals as well has been severely impacted. The circle of disruption is widening. You know, I mean, it's not just those who are on the front lines of the insecurity. The attacks on the market as well start to remove the confidence, disturb the trade as well.
Well, you mentioned the market attacks, and I think people think of that as something that increases insecurity from violence, but also, does that affect food security? Are people afraid to go to the markets to buy food?
It'll affect, you know, the flows through the market. The market we saw wouldn't have the same crowd because people assembling in large numbers, unfortunately, seem to be the target. So it does generate fear.
Mary Ellen Magrotti is the World Food Programme Country Director for Chad. She spoke with Ricky Schreier from the Chadian capital in N'Djamena. Genes play a role in the development of cancer, but a new study suggests that genetic bad luck, which predisposes us to cancer, may be less of an influence on our risk for the disease than environmental factors. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Genes are not destiny seems to be the message from a new study looking at the relative risk of environmental factors on the development of cancer. In fact, says Yusuf Hanoun, who heads the Stony Brook University Cancer Center in New York, bad genes and DNA mutations appear to play a relatively small role in whether someone develops cancer. More important, he says, are environmental exposures such as inhaling tobacco smoke and eating red meat.
Around 70-90% of cancer incidence appears to be related to external factors, whereas only 10-30% is related to those intrinsic factors I talked about with mutation rates, etc.
Hanoun and colleagues used a number of complex approaches, including computer modeling, population studies, and genetic analyses, to arrive at their conclusions published in the journal Nature. For example, they looked at how stem cells in different parts of the body divide and mutate, noting that a similar number of genetic errors did not lead to cancer in all tissues. The researchers also investigated how people's risk of cancer changes when they move from one place to another, suggesting a strong role for external factors in the development of cancer. A study published earlier this year in the journal Science concluded most cancer was the result of genetic bad luck, but this study arrives at an opposite conclusion. Hanoun, however, does not entirely rule out genetic randomness when it comes to who gets cancer and who doesn't.
So there is an element of luck in that, but then there is a larger element of exposures and external factors that increase that risk tremendously. So what we want to do is identify those and dial it back so we go back to that very low intrinsic level.
In the meantime, some big cancer risk factors like cigarette smoking are already known and can be avoided. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
High unemployment rates continue to stymie economic growth in many African countries. 51% of young men and 43% of young men are unemployed. However, some experts say 60% of the best jobs haven't even been invented yet. Simon Stumpf, regional director of Ashoka in East Africa, told VOA's Jackson Vonganyi that social entrepreneurs can reverse staggering youth unemployment rates.
So if you look at any of the top jobs in any country, top meaning the most sought after, the most desirable, the best paying, you're typically going to see that whether it's web designer, app developer, or, you know, organic farmer, transporter. These are new jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago. So if you look into the future, we can say the same thing. We can say that the jobs that will be on that top 10 list 10 years from now, 20 years from now, do not exist yet. So our job, if we want to help young people be ready for the future, is to help predict what those best jobs are going to be, or more importantly, what skills they're going to need to fill those or any job in the emerging future.
And what is this prediction based upon?
So Ashoka, for 30 years, has really been a partner and an ally and learned from entrepreneurs. We believe entrepreneurs don't work just in the private sector. Entrepreneurs, thankfully, tackle every challenge. And social entrepreneurs are people who are looking at new healthcare systems, new education systems, new ways of farming, new ways of thinking about talent. So our predictions are based on sitting with entrepreneurs, betting on them, and saying, we believe you're going to be successful, and then stepping into that adjacent possible, saying, if this person is successful, the entire solar energy industry in Uganda will be transformed. If this person is successful, veterinary clinics in Kenya will not look the way they do today. They will look like, you know, this model that this entrepreneur is championing. And so what we're able to do is stitch together a new vision, a futuristic vision, based on our bet and our belief that these creative entrepreneurs will succeed in transforming the field that they've dedicated their lives to reimagining and revisioning.
Are these jobs reflective of how many of these African societies are evolving in the 21st century?
Absolutely. And actually, here again, I think entrepreneurs are our best partners in seeing where a society is going, seeing where a society is trending. These are people, again, they're from, you know, these places. They have a deep and a nuanced understanding of the challenges and the opportunities. And they bet their careers, they bet their lives, they get family and friends to invest in them. And they bet on these visions for the future. So if you believe in entrepreneurs and their ability to reimagine systems, to see solutions where other people see problems, they're the best investment, but they're also the best way in which we can see, you know, where our societies, where our countries are going.
And what does it take, or what will it take for these for young people who want to enter this new or future job market?
So about a year ago, I wrote a blog post where I shared, you know, 10 of the jobs or 9, something, you know, a few jobs that I thought were most exciting. And somebody rightly said, you know what, these are going to employ tens of thousands of people, maybe 100,000. And so it's not, you know, this is not a one-size-fits-all prescription. I can't say you should all be trained as doctors because that's the biggest growth industry, right?
Mm.
So the way a young person should hear this, and the way a young person might, you know, think about being ready for her future is to say, well, what are the skills that are common across these most, you know, emerging, desirable, important jobs? And that's where we've also spent some time looking. And there's some clear patterns. And they link with another trend that we can see across these entrepreneurs, which is that the world is becoming less about one big person and many small people, you know, one person setting the rules and getting everybody to follow. But it's much more about everybody a problem solver, everybody a big person, and working in teams to create solutions. So how do you build those teams? How do you build a track record, a sort of a muscle around solving problems creatively? How do you, you know, build empathy so that you can really learn from your colleagues and people around you and make those teams that much stronger and more effective? Those are the skills that are going to help you, you know, be the most competitive applicant, if you will.
Simon Stumpf is the regional director of Ashoka in East Africa. He spoke with VOA's Jackson Mvungani.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lino Mudu discusses with medical experts the sexually transmitted diseases. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call in during the show, our telephone number is 202 619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Plotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sport, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Good evening, Douglas.
Good evening, sports fans. In tonight's Nightline Africa Sports, we begin with athletics, where the organizers of the IAAF Gold Label Road Race have announced that former Dubai Marathon champion Tiffy Sagay will return to the Middle East when she joins the field for the 2016 Standard Chartered Dubai Marathon on January 22nd. The 31-year-old Ethiopian won the 2013 Dubai Marathon title in 2 hours, 23 minutes and 23 seconds and has her personal best of 2 hours, 20 minutes and 18 seconds, which she set when winning the 2014 Berlin Marathon. With other marathon wins in Paris in 2012, Porto, her marathon debut in 2008, Shanghai in 2010 and Tokyo 2014, Sagay will again be one of the favorites in Dubai and will also be looking for a first time, which will boost her chances of selection for the Rio 2016 Olympic Games. Fellow Ethiopian Sagay Kabede will headline the men's event. Kabede is a bronze medalist from the 2008 Olympic Marathon in Beijing and a two-time win of the London Marathon. His resume also includes victories in the Chicago, Paris, and Fakauka marathons. Kabede has a chance to bring home one of the biggest prizes from a marathon as the Dubai Marathon men's and women's champions take home $250,000, respectively. Ethiopia's Eyele Abshero holds the men's course record with a 2-hour, 4 minutes, 23 seconds victory in 2012. A victory for Kabede would extend the Ethiopian winning streak to 5 straight years. Last year's men's race was won by Ethiopia's Behanu Lemi in 2 hours, 5 minutes and 28 seconds. In boxing, lately all talk has been about British boxer Tyson Fury, who defeated Vladimir Klitschko to become the unified heavyweight champion. My colleague Sunny Young sought out Nande Hollywood Maweta to speak about the prospects for the new champion. Sunny?
Namdi, let's begin our end-of-year boxing chat with the big boys in the heavyweight division. Tyson Fury, a very big British boxer, wins the world heavyweight title. He beat Vladimir Klitschko, but the IBF strips Tyson Fury of the belt. What is that all about, Namdi?
Well, Sonny, when they made the deal for Klitschko and Tyson Fury to fight, there was a rematch clause, which means there has to be an immediate rematch. And IBF did not know about this immediate rematch clause. So with a big upset of Klitschko and Tyson Fury going for the rematch, then what happens to the number one contender who is from Ukraine, you know? And the IBF said, no, this cannot happen. You must face the number one contender, Vaclav Glaskov, or you lose the title. And then what happened is that Tyson Fury said, no, I don't need your title because I still got the WBO and the WBA title.
Well, we'll talk about the Fury-Klitschko rematch, Namdi. But first, let's go back to the fight. What did you think of Fury's performance against Klitschko?
It was a boring fight, Sonny. I expected Fury to really knock Vladimir out. For our listeners, Sonny, you know how we make fun of Vladimir. And his jab and grab style, you know. That was the best thing to happen to the heavyweight division because this guy sat on 3 belts, you know. It was a very ugly fight, but the fight fans believe the best man won. And I think it's good for the heavyweight division.
Namdi, when do you think they'll fight again in 2016?
Well, they're looking at somewhere around April or May. The discussion now, is this fight bigger in Germany or is this fight bigger in Europe? We're talking about in the UK, the Wembley. In Germany, Klitschko is pulling 50,000. But right now, he's not the champion. Tyson Fury is the champion. This fight means a lot in the UK, and I think Tyson Fury can fill up the Wembley.
What did you think of Fury's antics in the ring, putting the gloves behind his back and taunting Klitschko?
Well, he took Klitschko's mojo away from him before the fight. In the fight game, we read body language before the fight. Right from the press conference to the inside the ring, Klitschko was really scared to fight. Go back and look at that fight. Klitschko was really, really scared because Tyson Fury really took away his mojo. The second fight would be much easier because Vladimir will, on the faster fight, and in the process of forcing the fight, he will get knocked out.
Speaking of knockouts, Namdi, Tyson Fury, named after that knockout artist, Mike Tyson. And yet, when I compare those two, Namdi, I just don't see Tyson Fury as being the future of the heavyweight division. Your thoughts?
He makes all these outrageous statements outside the ring, and he's a very colorful character too. I mean, he's not boring guy. He will really hype the fight. He will talk up the fight. That's what we need. We don't need a boring champion that will put you to sleep with his style. This guy will make you want to buy a ticket. This is what the fight game is all about. In the ring, he's okay, he's sloppy, but you know, he's an entertaining guy, and that's what the champion is all about.
Tyson Fury getting a lot of headlines these days in the UK, Namdi. And so is another heavyweight with Nigerian ties. Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
Sonny, his name is Anthony Oluwafemi Olaseni Joshua. He is the British and Commonwealth heavyweight champion. 15-0 with 15 knockouts. Nigerian mother, English father of Nigerian and Irish descent. He's the true Niger boy.
Nande Hollywood Maweta speaking to my colleague Sunny Young. And finally in football, the Zimbabwe Football Association has reinstated national team coach Callisto Pasua after the country's sports minister intervened. Pasua was fired on Thursday as the training camp for next month's African Nations Championship finals was disbanded. The move came 12 days into the tenure of the new Zimbabwe Football Association president, Philip Chiangwa. Chiangwa announced on Saturday that Pasua and his technical team had been reinstated following consultations with the Zimbabwe Football Association executive. Now the players will regroup and resume training on Monday. Zimbabwe finished fourth at the 2014 CHAN finals and will play in Group D with Mali, Uganda and Zambia at the 2016 edition in Rwanda. And that's it for tonight's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline, Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Enjoy.
Oh, yeah. I love you. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, 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 no. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Ima kwanine humo. Yeah. My girl, if I go do anything, I go do my well work for you. I'm putting all my trust in you. Cause I'm in love with you.
Love.
It's like I've proven myself and everything depends on you. I can't get my eyes off you. Girl, I'm in love with you. I wanna make him a one in a woman.
Girl, now you be the one.
Ever, I make it.
And I'm losing my mind.
Baby, come closer, you're far away.
Wherever you are.
Don't even think that I let you to suffer. Cause you are my angel, my lover. And I'm screaming,
I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Girl, I cannot do without you. Let me be the one beside you.
I say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.
You are the woman of my dreams. The person I'm facing for me.
Man, in a woman. Yeah. If one I met. Yeah. Girl, I wanna be a man and I want you to be my boo. My life is incomplete without you.
cause I'm in love with you. Some say that I've been deceiving myself by involving myself with you. I swear not only you. I feel to tell I do. Makagini, makanine, wubo. Girl, now you be the one. Ewo, ewo, lame. And I'm losing my mind. Baby, make you come closer where you there. Wherever you are. Don't even think that I'll make you to suffer. Cause you are my angel, my lover. And I'm screaming. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Girl, I cannot do without you. Let me be the one beside you. I say I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.
You are the woman of my dreams. The person I'm facing for me.
Hey, hey.
In a woman. Hey, follow me. I want to know me. I don't care what people say. Cause my love is here to stay. And I go do anything for you. Girl, I pledge my love for you. Cause I'm in love with you.
Girl, now you be the one.
Hey, what?
And I'm losing my mind.
And I'm losing my mind. Where you there?
Wherever you are.
Wherever you are.
The person I'm facing
for me, hey. When I look into your eyes, I'm a wife I didn't see. Forever together, you and I are meant to be. No doubt me, you be the person I'm facing for me. Yeah. Now only you feel be my love. Our love no go slow down. We go take over the whole town. Our love no go slow down. We go take over the whole town. Our love no go slow down, 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 down. See, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Hey, I love you, yeah.
Get up in the morning, I'm yawning. Alarm clock woke me up. I'm hitting on a snoozing. I'm drooling. DJ won't shut up. Steady got a beggar, a hot song. Sound like the last one. I might as well listen and pay attention. Thought that I should mention how, what, who made that sound like the same 10 songs played back. Maybe it's my imagination.
Turn to the next station.
What happened to creativity? Where'd it go? For a rude awakening, let them know. Oh, turn my guitar up and my radio down. The industry need changing, I'ma calm now. So-called artists don't sound the same. Real music never get no play. Everybody want 3 minutes of fame. One hit, one music, getting late. This is what made me feel like I was born to keep the music alive. I was born to keep the music alive. A instrumental from Swiss Beat.
Showtime.
A couple bars from Wheezy. And Diddy gotta say something.
It's Bad Boy Baby.
Formula work goes so well. Making y'all CDs never sell. Phony A&Rs in the industry. Then you blame it on the economy. All I'm saying is that music is my inspiration. But if it's misused and abused, then I'ma speak for my generation. What happened to creativity? Where'd it go? It's time for a rude awakening. Radio down, the
feel it changing, I'ma calm now. So caught on, so sound the same. Real music never get no play. Everybody want 3 minutes of fame. One hit, one is it getting late. This is what made me feel like I was born to keep the music alive. I was born to keep the music alive. No more robots singing. Boom. No more tricks to make us listen. Cause I've been buying so amazing high. Cause Mr. DJ, you need to stop. African queen, ooh Lord, ooh Lord, just like the sun, light up the earth, you light up my life, the only one I ever see with a smile so bright, hey, and just yesterday, you came around my way, you changed my horse in way. With your astonishing beauty, oh, you couldn't make a brother sing. No ordinary thing, a supernatural being. And no, you are brighter than the moon, brighter than the star. I love you just the way you are. And you are my African queen, the girl of my dreams. You take me where I've never been, yeah. You make my heart go ding-a-ling-a-ling. Oh, you are my African queen, the girl of my dreams. And you remind me of a thing, and that is the African beauty. Hey, yeah. Ooh, you are my African queen. Oh, Lord, ooh, Lord. Out of a million, you stand as one, the outstanding one. I look into your eyes, girl, what I see is paradise. Hey, you captivated my soul. Now every day I want you more. I cannot deny this feeling I'm feeling inside. Hey, no one cannot take your place. You cannot take your space. It's a fact I cannot erase. And no, you are the one that makes me smile. Make me float like a boat upon the night. Girl, you are my African queen, the girl of my dreams. You take me where I've never been. You make my heart go ding-a-ling-a-ling. Yeah, you are my African queen, the girl of my dreams. And you remind me of a thing, and that is the African beauty. And I know, oh yes I know, you are my African queen. And I know, see I know, see I know what I am feeling in my heart and in my soul. Oh, I know that it is love, and I know that this love was surely sent from up above. Cause you're the only one that I think of. You are my African queen, and I know that it means that you're the only one that I will serve. I'll give you my heart, my love, my body and my money. Every other thing you think of. In a man, who could think of anything better than you? Who could think of ever hurting you? Sacrifice my all, I'll give it all to you. You are my African queen, for real. You are my African queen.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Developments in Burundi reached a stage last week that key members of the international community, we are obliged to take swift action. First, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, expressed grave concern of the possibility of genocide in Burundi. This was followed by the head of the Human Rights Agency in Geneva, who criticized some statements of Burundian officials and expressed concern also of the possibility of genocide. Then the African Union came out with a very strong statement observing that it was prepared to send a 5,000-strong military force to Burundi without any the concerns of the government to protect human lives in the country. These developments are due to the failure of the international community to react firmly to the defiance of the president of Burundi when he went ahead to a third term despite all the warnings from the international community. But the government of Burundi has now challenged the African Union, stating that it would be wrong for it to send troops to Burundi without its consent, and saying that this would constitute an attack on Burundi. This is quite wrong, and officials should go back and look at all available records. It should not be forgotten that when ECOWAS in the late 1980s first established its military observer group, ECOMO, to be sent to Liberia to save lives, it did not require the authorization of the Security Council. And that swift action by ECOWAS did preserve the country of Liberia and save lives not only of Liberians, but those of the sub-region. But it is wise that the African Union is now seeking the support of the Security Council. And this should be borne in mind by the officials in Burundi. The Security Council should give full support, not only because of the African Union's action, but because the Secretary General of the United Nations has also expressed grave concern. The Security Council can act under Chapter 7, which would mean this would be an enforcement force, not a peacekeeping force. The Burundi officials should know that when the Security Council acts under Chapter 7 and taking enforcement, Article 25 of the UN Charter comes into play. The government is obliged to accept the decision of the Security Council. And the Security Council support for African Union, that is acting on its behalf, will ensure that a stage is set for a possible solution that may not require the spilling of blood. Once the African Union force enters Burundi, an appeal should be made to all Burundians that have fled the country to neighboring countries to return to the country now that there would be an international protection force in the country. Then the government and the opposition should be urged to reach some accommodation, prior negotiations, and the government of Burundi should make the necessary adjustments to satisfy all the parties concerned. This is very essential that this be done, because we are now in a situation where the governments are acting recklessly because they believe there is complete impunity. And this is the time that the UN should prove that this is not the case by giving support to the African Union. We have also seen in recent days that the Security Council has been acting firmly in Syria, for example, unanimously, in trying to find a peaceful solution. It is no less important for the Security Council to act in the case of Burundi. This is now beside the point of whether or not it was legal or illegal for Burundi to go against an international agreement that there should be only two terms. What we have seen now in Burundi is that government officials are acting in a way that they believe no one can trust them. This is the time that they should be taught a lesson that they must abide by agreements reached with the help of the international community. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. I hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Jonah Cummings, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, one who eats alone cannot discuss the taste of the food with others. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The ocean is our lifeline. It produces much of our oxygen, regulates our climate, and supports the greatest abundance of life on our planet. If the ocean were to lose its capacity to provide these services, it would threaten the survival of nearly every creature and every plant. The ocean is fragile. The ocean is an ecosystem, and the ocean requires stewardship, just like every other aspect of life on this planet. And for all its size and its majesty, and it is majestic for those who've spent time on the ocean, it is vulnerable, said Secretary of State John Kerry at an event on the sidelines of the Paris Climate Conference. No one should underestimate how critical it is to deal with the three great problems of the ocean today, he said. The first of these is pollution. It happens inadvertently, not willfully, but nevertheless, it is one of those byproducts of development and industrialization and agribusiness. So, for example, nitrates in agricultural runoff cause ever-expanding dead zones. Plastic trash carried on the currents creates problems for navigation and jeopardizes sea creatures. The second problem is illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, IUU for short. Illegal fishers take too many fish. They also frequently use damaging practices and equipment, such as the destructive drift net. Drift nets and other destructive fishing practices have been banned, but there is not enough enforcement. We must change that, said Secretary of State Kerry, and we can start by marshaling all available resources. We're putting together a system of interconnectedness on a global law enforcement and military basis, linking also with satellites, with NASA and others, in order to try to put together a regulatory mechanism. A third problem, ocean acidification, caused by increased concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, kills coral reefs and destroys habitat fish need for spawning. An estimated 30% to 40% of the carbon dioxide from human activity released into the atmosphere dissolves into oceans, rivers, and lakes. For our part, the United States aims to designate for protection 10% of ocean and coastal areas. We are also working to conserve important coastal ecosystems, areas such as mangroves and salt marshes that serves as sinks to absorb carbon dioxide. Working together, the international community must ensure that agricultural and fishing practices are made sustainable and shape our energy policies to address climate change and acidification, said Secretary of State Kerry. The ocean is key to life itself. We can't live without it. Together, we must protect it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.